Here is the Crescendo Music Education Podcast, Episode 3. Welcome to the first interview episode. Well, really, I think of it more as like a chat sort of episode. You're going to hear me have a bit of a conversation with Aileen Miracle. Now, a lot of you already know Aileen, and I will introduce her officially once the little chat gets going. But I just wanted to point out a few things before we started. First off, it was fun. I had a fabulous time. We talk about her work, her professional journey. We talk about gratitude. I introduce something I'm going to be using in all of my little interview chats with people called Nuggets of Fabulous. You'll hear about those, and you'll get lots of tips and advice. And one of the songs that Aileen talks about is Love Somebody. Now, I use a different version, which I didn't discuss on the podcast, but I thought I should mention here. The version that I use goes, Love somebody, yes I do. Love somebody, yes I do. Love somebody, yes I do. Love somebody, but I won't tell who. I think it's important to note when you're using folk music that there's going to be more than one version. It's just a good idea to make sure that you do a bit of research around which one that you're using, but that's the nature of folk songs. There's going to be variations and versions. Now sit back and enjoy my chat with Aileen Miracle. Hello and welcome to the Crescendo Music Podcast. Today we have Aileen Miracle. It's so exciting. And I'm going to be really, I don't know if this shows my age or my curiosity and excitement, but I think it's amazing that I'm sitting here looking at Aileen and she's on the other side of the world in yesterday. That's amazing.
Yesterday, yes.
Yeah. So I think that's amazing. I'm still just thrilled by that every time it happens. So I'm here in Brisbane, Queensland, Australia, and you're over there in, where are you precisely?
Near Columbus, Ohio.
There you go. Other side of the world.
And yes, and today it's Thursday, but it's Friday for you, right?
Friday morning here. Oh, it's exciting. So those of you who do not know Aileen, all right, I'll read you a little bit of her bio. So Aileen Miracle teaches general music, band and choir in the Olentangy. I'm glad you're there. Olentangy local school district in Ohio. This is her 23rd year teaching. Aileen received her BME from Central Michigan University and her MME from Capital University. In 2016, she was awarded Teacher of the Year at Cheshire Elementary. Oh, yeah, that sounds very flash, Aileen. She's been active in local, regional, and national music education organizations. Her blog is at MrsMiraclesMusicRoom.com, and she presents music education workshops across the nation and around the world. So welcome, Aileen.
Yay. Thank you for having me.
And we first met at one of these conferences in 2015.
Yes, that was really fun.
So that was in Minneapolis. It was, well, technically my second ever trips to the States. So that year I was accepted at two conferences. So I had to accept both, but I couldn't stay over the whole time. So I did Georgia State Conference and then flew home and then did Minneapolis and flew home. That's a lot of flying. So that's my whole
big flight too.
Huge. But that was my first OAKE. Now you guys say OAKE, don't you?
I say OAKE, but there are some people in the organization that still say OAK, but I say OAKE.
Yeah. In Australia, we tend to just say OAK. And then when I went to America and I saw, people are calling it OAKE. Okay. I think it spells something. Let's say OAK. It spells something. I think that's great.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So ever since meeting you, and of course I knew of you, Aileen, and then meeting you personally was fabulous. And we've just kept a little bit in touch since then. Had a couple of little adventures in Australia.
Yes, we have.
And a lot of laughs.
That involved you climbing through a window.
I know. Okay, should we just quickly explain?
Yeah, sure.
I was laughing so much. In fact, looking at that picture just sets me off again. So we were staying at an Airbnb, and although I live in Brisbane, and our very good, wonderful friend, Deb Bryden, hello, Deb, also lives in Brisbane, we decided that we should take an Airbnb with Aileen, and the three of us, we would look after Aileen, make sure that she gets to and from the workshop she was working at, and, you know, gets the whole Brisbane experience. Uh-huh. So unfortunately, I think it was something I did. I think I flicked a lock or something. We locked ourselves out of the Airbnb, and basically I climbed through a window.
It was hilarious.
It was so funny.
And I think what you did was like, so, like it shouldn't have locked us out, but it did. Oh my gosh. That was crazy. Awesome. Yeah. So we were just like laughing hysterically as you're climbing through the window, but then you got in.
I did. And can I say, it wasn't that easy. It was. Okay. All right. Do you know, I'm good for everyone here listening to my new Crescendo podcast. I'll put the photo on the show notes page.
Oh my gosh, that would be so fun.
That'd be fun. Okay. All right. So I know it won't make you laugh the same way it made us laugh, but oh boy, it was funny. And I won't even mention the fact that we were all dying to get to the bathroom. That did not help the situation. Oh my goodness.
My gosh.
All right. So we actually do have a sort of a plan for our chat. Okay.
Yes.
So if we go back to the bio that I just read out, so listening to that, what would you like to add to this summary of your work?
I would say over the course of my teaching career, I've taught kindergarten through seventh grade general music and fifth grade band and third, fourth, and fifth grade choir. And I also was able to finish my master's degree at the Kodály Institute in Hungary, which was such an amazing experience. I didn't get to spend a full year there, like, or a semester there, like some people do. It was 3 weeks, but it was such a cool experience. So yeah.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. It was really great.
I think that's on every Kodály inspired teacher's wish list, isn't it?
Yes.
Love to get there. Have not done that.
Yeah. And I guess I should say too, I was a trumpet player in college. I say was because I'm not playing very much these days. But, you know, like a lot of music teachers, I can play Twinkle Twinkle Little Star on like a dozen different instruments. But these days I've been, you know, kind of noodling around with ukulele and with dulcimer. And so I really like learning new instruments. And yeah,
it's lovely. I do love the way that young children just think we're awesome anyway. I can play four chords on the guitar and they think, I'm just an amazing guitarist.
Yes. Wow, you're so good.
I know. I feel like checking and saying, oh, dudes, no, like I'm really not good.
We had like a little assembly, like a grade level assembly for winter holidays. So we had like Christmas and songs and Hanukkah songs and Kwanzaa songs. And we just had one grade level at a time because of the pandemic so that everyone could be spread out. And the PE teacher, the gym teacher, saw me playing piano. The lights were off. So he had to like take his flashlight on his phone and like put it over the piano so I could see the keys. And I got done playing and it was very basic. And he was like, wow, you are so good. And I was like laughing hysterically. Like, that's very nice. I'm not, but thank you.
Thank you. And then you feel awful when you say, yeah, I'm not, but thanks. Because it makes it sound like, I don't know, you're trying to be humble when, you know.
Right. It's like, no, really, I'm not being humble. It was not good, but thank you.
I love it. I hear you. And I reckon other music teachers out there are going, yep. Oh, okay. So with all of those things that you've done, could you pick one highlight or a couple of highlights, or maybe the Hungary trip, which you've talked about, but your whole journey as a music educator?
I think that, you know, at the beginning of my career, I started teaching in 1999, and it was before blogs, before podcasts, before Pinterest, you know, before teachers pay teachers, before all of that. And the way that I learned about how to better, you know, be better at my craft was by going to conferences and by going to workshops. Mm-hmm. And I just absolutely loved professional development and just learning from other people. And then several years in, once I started presenting, you know, workshops and at conferences and that kind of thing, I loved that too, because I felt like I could share what I had learned from other people, but also share what I've created myself. And I just get so excited to either be at professional development and learn from other people, or be presenting professional development and be able to teach other people. I just love that so much. And I was able to, you know, come over to Australia and present for your organization. And it was just, I absolutely love that. It really like lights me up and gets me excited.
Well, it's wonderful. Well, I think too, because it's connected to not just the music and the technical music education sides, but it's the heart and the soul and the connection of people on top of that, I think too. Yeah, wonderful.
And I think like we as music teachers often feel like we're on an island all by ourselves and other people don't get what we do. But when we're able to get together at professional development, we realize like, oh, these are my people. Like they get what I'm doing, you know?
Yes. Yes. It's like, yeah, here's my tribe. Here's my people.
Yeah.
I've got it. So because you've already talked about people, that really leads us to the people who you think have been the most influential in your life. And we can go personal here if you like to. Mm-hmm. But I know for me, when I look at my professional journey and personal too, obviously, but it's about the people that do that for you, that special spark or that direction or that inspiration. So I bet it's going to be hard. I don't know if you can narrow it down to one, two.
I can't. Two. I will go with three.
Three's good.
All right. So I have two for professional. When I was in college, I went to school at Central Michigan University, and one of my professors was my Delcroze professor. I was really lucky that in my undergrad, they actually had courses specifically for Delcroze. Like they had a Delcroze class, they had an ORF class, and they had a Kodak class. And kind of ironically enough, I ended up taking the ORF class and the Delcroze class, but not the Kodak class. But I appreciated that we had that. And our Delcroze professor, his name is Timothy Caldwell. He's retired now. But I took the class with him, was super excited about it. And he saw promise in me, so pulled me aside and said he wanted to give me free pedagogy lessons, which like, when does that ever happen? You know? He taught me how to teach, you know, one-on-one instead of in a class. And I'm just so grateful for that he did that for me and had me start teaching with him for a Delcroze class for a Suzuki program. And I just learned so much from him, and I'm so thankful that he did that for me. Another professional influential person, Bruce Swank. I don't know if you're familiar with Bruce Swank, but he was my level 2 Kodai teacher. His wife, Julie, is also amazing. She was my level 1 teacher. But Bruce, I taught with, so he was my level 2 teacher. And then several years later, I started teaching at DePaul University's Kodai program. And Bruce was the level 2 teacher and I was the level 1 teacher. And at some points was also the level 3 teacher. But anyway, like I learned so much from him being his student. But then when he was my colleague, that was just really cool to be able to hear his perspectives, a colleague kind of perspective instead of from a student. And you know, I have 2 dads. I have a father and I have a stepdad, but Bruce was like my 3rd dad. So just so appreciate the relationship that I built with him and how much I learned from him. He's really a master teacher. So, and then as far as personal, again, this is very hard, but I'm going to have to go with my Aunt Lori, who we affectionately called Gogi. She passed away several years ago from lung cancer, but she was only like 12 years older than me and was just always very much in my life, very much wild and crazy, would just be up for anything, and kind of like pushed me a little bit to be a little bit more courageous. I think inherent, like just if I just go off of what I'm like naturally, I can be a little bit inhibited and I don't necessarily want to take those risks, but she really pushed me to take risks. Like we went mule riding my very first year of teaching. I went out and visited her in LA and we went on this trip to the Grand Canyon and we went mule riding and she was like, okay, we're going to go mule riding in the Grand Canyon. And I was like, sounds great. I didn't realize until I was on the mule and I could see like 1,000 feet down or whatever, like right there, it was 1,000 feet down.
No.
Like, oh my gosh. Oh. What am I going on to?
No.
But I love her so much and admire her so much. I'm like, okay, sounds good. And then I'm looking 1,000 feet down going, oh my gosh, what am I doing?
Oh no.
So she just was always like kind of like pushing me to be a little bit more courageous and to try something new. And I think about some of the adventures I've had where I've gone to different states and different countries and across the world for professional development. And I think about her that, you know, she was the first person who taught me how to hail a cab. And, you know, like she's just kind of pushing me, like, you can do it. You're fine. You're fine. You're fine. So I'm definitely grateful for that.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. It sounds like we all need someone like that. Beautiful. That is lovely. And do you think, with all of these lovely people and things you've done, could you narrow down for what it is you are most grateful?
As we're recording this, my mom actually just passed away earlier this week, which obviously has been heartbreaking and really hard. And I think in, you know, this week especially, I've come to appreciate my family and friends and how much they mean to me, you know, and just being able to like put aside any differences and just love each other for who we are and support each other through something like this. I'm definitely, that's kind of at the forefront of my mind right now.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so sorry, Eileen.
Thank you. I think on a professional level, if I were to think about what I'm the most grateful for, it would just be having a job that I really love. You know, not everybody has that. I think sometimes we as music teachers forget that like there are a lot of people in the world who, you know, go to work because they have to and they do their job because they have to, not because they want to. And I'm not at all saying that teaching music is not hard. There are definitely moments that are very hard and very difficult, especially with the pandemic and like things just changing so much. But there are moments when we're teaching, I just know for me, and I know for you, because I've seen you teach and you are so joyful when you are teaching, that you just think like, oh my gosh, I get paid for this, you know? So like, I'm very grateful for those moments where we're just like having fun with our students. And yeah.
Yeah, I can really understand too that sometimes I think it's easy to almost overlook being grateful for our family and what we've got, especially if we're very passionate in our job and our passion as music educators and what we do for the children and with the children overtakes everything. And we take the other stuff a bit for granted because we're so passionate about our job. So I think that big reminder to be grateful for those other things.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And to not let our love for what we do kind of overrun our life and to kind of keep that balance too is also very important.
It is very important. Thank you for that very timely, though very sad reminder, Eileen. All right. Well, let's get back to what you do best, teach music. Okay, here we go, teach those kids. So, this is a little question that I wanted to insert, and I thought about what I was going to call it. And just I wrote the first thing that came into my head, and I'm going, no, this I'm sticking with this. All right. I'm going to call them nuggets of fabulous. All right. So, I want you to give us, and when I say us, I mean me and my listeners. Now, I have no idea at this point, since this is probably going to be episode 3. So it's obviously very new. I could have me and one other person listening,
I'm
okay?
sure you'll have more.
I hope so. But whoever is listening, or maybe in the future when the podcast is better known, people are coming back to listen
Yes.
to episode 3. Yeah. And they'll think, oh, Aileen, we'll have to listen to that because she's great. So you're going to give all of the listeners some little nuggets of fabulous. So I'm like opening this wide open. It could be anything, resources, activities, songs, games, hints, tricks, anything. Some nuggets of fabulous from your experience to our listeners.
Okay, I have so many to choose from. This was kind of hard, but I am going to attempt. Okay, is it okay if I have five?
You can have five, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, number one, I have kind of a mix. I have like a printed resource, a website, a tech tool, and a couple of games that I love.
Okay, that's fabulous.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. Gosh, there's so many. But okay. So, the first one I have is a printed resource called An American Methodology. Are you familiar with it, Debbie?
No, I'm not. Is it okay
Yeah.
to admit
So,
that?
no, that's totally okay.
Okay.
I mean, it's maybe more of an American thing since it's called An American Methodology. I don't know, but it is a printed resource and it is a little bit pricey. It's like a little bit over $100, but it's a huge book, huge spiral bound book of like a bunch of folk songs, a bunch of singing games. So it's got like one section of it that's all singing games. And then it has a section that's all about like teaching strategies. Like if you are preparing dough or if you're practicing ticket ticket or whatever, you know, you're preparing or practicing, here's how to do it. Here's some ideas for you. It is so awesome. So I always like if someone is new to the Kodai philosophy, I always recommend that one because even though it's kind of pricey, it is just like a treasure trove of good teaching materials, good songs. It's awesome. So that's my number one. There are so many great printed resources out there, but I really love that one, especially if you are new to, but even if you're experienced, like it's just like a good reminder of like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. Oh, I haven't done that in a while. You know, some games or activities or whatever for certain concepts. All right. Number two I have is one of my all-time favorite websites, which is Chrome Music Lab. Have you used Chrome Music Lab?
I've actually got some Chrome Music Lab ready to try out this year.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So yeah. All right. So for those of you who aren't familiar, Chrome Music Lab is a website that has like a bunch of different kind of like games or activities where students can create their own music. So like they could create their own melody, they can create their own rhythm, they can create art that ends up being played as a musical composition, which it's called Kandinsky and the kids absolutely love that. So what I really love about it is like, you could do it as a whole group. Like even if you don't have a bunch of Chromebooks or iPads or whatever in your room, you could just put it up on your, if you have a way to project your computer for students to see that, then they could see it and you could have student volunteers come up and, you know, kind of experiment or explore with it or whatever. But then if you do have some kind of tech devices like an iPad or Chromebooks or whatever, then you can also have students just get onto Chrome Music Lab and then they can explore on their own. It gives students a lot of agency because they get to choose which activities, like even if you are specific with it and say, I want you to try this activity first, and here's what I want you to do with it. Like I did that this week with Somi and Law for my second graders. They just learned Law because they're a little bit behind because, you know, COVID, but I had them, they had just learned about Law. So I had them get onto Chrome Music Lab and create with Somi and Law, which is like the third, fifth, and sixth rectangle in the game or in the on the website. And then they could create with whatever notes they wanted to. And then they could just hit the back button in Melody Maker to go to any activity they wanted to. So there's just like a lot of choice there. So that one is super fun. I did that also with first grade this week where they got to play in Chrome Music Lab. And I heard a first grade student just say, this is so fun. You know, he was like so excited. And I just, you know, those moments are so awesome.
Winning. So really, there's absolutely no excuse for me not having used it, except that I haven't yet. So because I could easily have done it at the front.
Yeah, and you can still do like your you know, typical like whole group lesson or whatever. You're preparing this, you're practicing this, but then you have 10 minutes or whatever on Chrome Music Lab and it's just so fun.
I love it.
Yes. And then what is, just as you go back into school, Debbie, are you socially distanced? What does it look like?
It's varying across Australia. So we've had, at the recording, I guess we should say here, it's the 4th of February in Australia. And we've had a 2-week delay here in Queensland. They've put the live kids coming back 2 weeks so that they've got time to get the kids vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So we actually start in a few days with kids back. Okay. So it varies across states, but at this stage they're back and we're just limiting large gatherings. Yeah. I believe teachers still have to wear masks. If we are 1.5 meters away from the students, we can take them off. Thank goodness. Okay. So the thing is, the instructions change almost daily.
Right.
So I'll see what they tell us to do on Monday morning. But
yes.
But mainly we're back face to face and relatively normal. I want to say that.
Okay. Okay, good. The reason I ask is because I have a game that can work for social distancing.
Oh, good.
Because in my district, we are fully masked. We're supposed to try to keep at a 3 feet distance. So like there are some games that I typically have played that I'm like, I don't think I can play that. Yes. So it's been a lot of like redesigning games or whatever. So I just, I wanted to do Kingsland and my colleague had been taking the students when it was nicer that he had been taking them outside to play Kingsland, but it's the dead of winter right now in Ohio. So I couldn't do that. So are you familiar with Four Corners? The game Four Corners?
Yes. Well, some version of it. Yes.
Yeah. So someone suggested that. I have a Facebook group where I just asked, okay, everyone, how do you play Kingsland social distance, you know, with social distancing? And someone recommended playing it Four Corners, and that's been super fun. So the idea is you have one person who's the king or queen who like sits on a chair and they close their eyes, and then everyone else is singing King's Land but going to one of the four corners in the room. And then at the end of the song, without opening their eyes, they just say a number 1, 2, 3, or 4. And whoever's sitting in that corner, standing in that corner, is out. And you just keep going until there's one person out. And I, at the end, I do it kind of like the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hula hoop game.
Yes.
I play it like that. Like if there are four people left and whoever gets called at the end is actually the winner. So that's just been a fun, for those of people who are social distancing, that's been a fun way to play King's Land, just a little twist.
I love it. I think that sounds amazing. And I hope this podcast does more than just reveal my complete ignorance. But could you sing King's Land? Because
oh, sure.
I don't know it.
Yes, I don't have a tuning fork on me, so here we go. Just pick a note.
I will forgive what you just
okay.
Let's do comfortable starting pitch, Aileen, as of the evening of the third.
Okay, so it's I'm on the King's Land, the king is not at home. He's gone to Boston to buy his wife a comb. So the words are, I'm on the King's Land, the king is not at home. He's gone to Boston to buy his wife a comb. And typically the game is like the king or queen is standing and closing their eyes and turning around, and everyone else is like marching towards the king or queen. And then the teacher will just like ring a bell or ring a triangle or whatever. And the king or queen turns around and chases all the students back to their land or whatever. Yeah. So that doesn't totally work with social distancing. So yeah, that's how I changed the game. And it's been really fun.
Oh, I love them. I want to try both ways.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I know you could probably do outside pretty well because the weather in Brisbane
at the moment
nicer than it is in Ohio.
It's quite magnificent. It's very, very rainy at the moment, but yeah, it's magnificent because we're in the middle of summer. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then another game that there's so many games that I absolutely love, but this one I just love because I think it just builds students up is, do you know the song Love Somebody?
Yes.
Okay. So the game that I played with Love Somebody is that one student again is chosen to come up to the front of the room and they choose someone that they love as a friend. And then we sing through the song and then they get to call on three different people to guess who they're thinking of that they love as a friend. And I just, you know, when a student is chosen, they're like, oh, I'm loved as a friend. That's so nice. You know, they really enjoy that. And it doesn't have any chasing or anything. It's just kind of a nice way to build those connections, you know?
Oh, that's lovely. I do a version with 8 cards. Now, oh, I really should check this, but I think it was a game to the song developed by our beautiful Judy Crean, who lived in Queensland. She passed away some time ago. And gee, I hope I get this right. You have 8 cards, and when I say cards, just little pieces of folded cardboard. And inside 4, there are hearts and 4 are blank. And you have a person who delivers the mail and they walk around the outside and, oh, I guess you could do the inside, with kids' hands behind their back and eyes closed, and they deliver the 8 envelopes.
Okay.
So they do that first off, the first person. And then the people with the 4 hearts have the love letters.
Uh-huh.
So they're up next, the 4 of them, and they get the blank card from one of the other children. So they've got 2 to deliver, and they deliver one love note and one other note that's not a love note.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That's really fun. Yeah.
I might find those instructions and put them in the show notes so that people listening can actually work it out. So that's great. And now, and for people who don't know the song, do you mind singing that one too?
Oh, yeah, sure. Again, I have no tuning fork, but we'll try it. Okay, so it's love somebody, yes, I do. Love somebody, yes, I do. Love somebody, yes, I do. Love somebody, but I won't say who. So it's great for Tikka Tikka. And it's just, you know, if you wanted to do it for Valentine's Day or whenever, you know, it's really fun.
Beautiful.
All right. So, and I have one last nugget of fabulous.
Okay.
And that's just, I think, like through distance learning, I had used Google Slides before distance learning, but I really became to appreciate it more just as a general tech tool through distance learning. Google Slides is just such a great tool for, like, you can create choice boards with it. You can create, you know, materials to project with it. You can easily share materials with other music teachers with it. And one way that I absolutely love that's really helped me be organized is to create agenda slides with it. So every day that I teach kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, and fifth every day. And I have an agenda slide, which is just kind of a list of everything we're doing in the lesson projected onto, I have a interactive whiteboard. So it's just projected on there. And I also have I can statements. I don't know if that's something that's done in Australia, but it's just like, I can keep the beat, I can sing a solo or whatever that is, just some kind of statement about what the students are doing. And if you don't have to do that, you don't have to put those on there. But what I really love about the agenda slides is it kind of helps me keep organized, but also, like, before I started using these, I used to spend probably 20 to 30 minutes every morning opening up all of my files, like opening up all the smart notebook files, opening up all the PowerPoints, opening up all the PDFs, and just making sure they're ready. But the great thing about the agenda slides is you can link to anything so that, like, if you have, let's say you have it in Google Slides and you have some Google Slides that you're opening up as part of the lesson, then you just link to it. And then all you have to do is tap it and it opens up.
Yes. Like, that's really exciting.
Yes, I absolutely love that. And I do have, I can send you some links, Debbie. I do have some free lesson plans that people can, you know, submit your email address for, and then you get these free lesson plans, and the lesson plans include the agenda slides. You can see what I'm talking about. So you can just, like, project it, link to anything you want, and then you just click it. It's just such a time saver, but it's also helpful. You know, some students really like to have that, like, what are we doing in music today? You know, often you'll have students, what are we doing in music today? But, like, I don't typically have students ask me that anymore, because they can just look up at the agenda and they can see what we're doing, and it calms some students down. Those students that really need to know, like, what are we doing? What are we doing? And they just look at the screen, they can get an idea. And you don't have to put, like, every single song title, especially if, like, let's say you're playing something on the recorder or you're humming it for them to identify. You could just put, like, mystery song or singing game. Like, you can still be a little bit mysterious about it if you don't want to tell them everything, but it helps keep me kind of more organized. And it, like I said, it saves so much time because you can just click a link and boom, it opens.
Oh, I love it. And yes, there are some students, you know, if you're looking at your ASD students and the ones that just have to know what's coming next, or they're too agitated. That's brilliant. I love it. Those live links. I think that's awesome. Thanks. Well, I'm assuming it's sort of the same all over the world, but I shouldn't assume. We seem to be fighting this battle in Australia, and I'll call it a fight because that's the way I think about it, to even have the existence of our profession. Music is just seen as not important enough by people who are in positions of power at various times, if I can say that without getting too political. I just think it seems to me to be a time in history where music advocacy, music education advocacy, is essential. Mm-hmm. We really need to convince people that it's essential for our children to have music education, just to create well-rounded human beings, not to necessarily create professional musicians, although that's fine. If that happens, fab. But, you know, I just don't think we should have to fight for our jobs, but we actually are. So I thought, while I had another fabulous music educator trapped to talk to for a little while, I wondered if you had any advice for us and our listeners around advocacy and how we can help convince people of the importance of our job. And we know, obviously. So right. What's your advice around advocacy?
Yeah, we struggle with that, definitely, in the States too. And I think often here, our struggle is that some classroom teachers might look at us like we're just babysitting their students while they get their planning. And yep, you understand that. Yes. So, or like that our job is not as hard, or, you know, or that, yes, from a parent point of view, like especially when we started doing distance learning in March of 2020, you know, a lot of parents, which I understand, like they felt so stressed out, rightfully so. But some parents were like, well, I'm not, it's just music. I'm not going to have them do that. You know, so you as a music teacher are spending hours and hours trying to come up with something for students to do only to be told that you're not important. So yes, I think something that has helped me is to just try to let my work speak for itself. So instead of trying to convince someone that music is important. I try to show them through their child coming home and talking about how much they love music class, and their child coming home and singing a song from music, or that kind of thing, like just letting my work speak for itself. And also informances have been helpful. So prior to COVID, I did that every year where I would invite parents into my music room. There would be like 1 week during the year where they could come in during their child's music class. And it's not necessarily for every grade level. I typically would do first grade informances, and the other grade levels would have some kind of performance throughout the year. But then at least one time during their child's elementary education, the parent would be able to see, the parent or parents would be able to see what their child's music class actually looked like. And what I have found is that, especially when I first started doing it, I had a lot of people who were shocked because they just expected that their child's music class was like their music class used to be. And so I had a lot of people that were like, oh my gosh, that's what you're doing in music class. That's really cool. Like I didn't do that when I was a kid, you know? So just doing something like that, if you're somehow, and yes, there are working parents who might not be able to make it, but if you could do something like that to somehow educate your parents so that they can see what's actually happening in the music classroom. And I do have a blog post about that, that I can send you a link to, mm-hmm. Debbie, if you want to put that in the show notes, all about informances and how I set them up. And like I said, you can kind of adapt it if my exact scenario doesn't work for your school, but just to have something the parents at your school and the school community can experience so that they understand what their students are actually doing in music class, I think is very helpful. And I have had classroom teachers actually come to those too, even though they're doing their planning, which is just very sweet of them. But then they even have more respect because they're able to see what their students are actually learning in music class.
Yes, fabulous suggestions. And we have just one more thing to finish off. All right. And I'm just going to call it get on your soapbox. So to finish off this chat that we're having, if you got to tell the world something, the most important thing you want to say to the whole world. Are you ready? You're going to get on your soapbox. Are you ready?
No pressure.
No pressure. So everybody in the whole world is tuned in and they're going to listen to this important message from Aileen Miracle. Okay. Ready, set, go.
Okay. I would say there's a lot for me to choose from here. Again, it's hard to choose, but I would say something that I feel really passionate about is that often as teachers, as music educators, we feel like we don't want to do something that might fail, especially in these times with Instagram, where, you know, everybody's classroom just looks so curated and perfect, right? Because that's the way it always is, right? But I even, you know, 23 years in, I often will be like, okay, I'm going to try A, B, or C. It might flop, but that's okay. I think sometimes we just need to hear the message. Obviously, you don't want your administrator walking in when you're trying something new, but even if they do, you could say, you know what, I'm trying something new. And this part of it, I'm realizing I should do this instead, or maybe I should have done that instead. Even if it's a failure, you will learn from it. I always laugh about so we're on like an A, B, C, D, E rotation in my district. So instead of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, like A day might be on a Tuesday, and that would be the new lesson. Mm-hmm. And then if we have a snow day, which we had a snow day today, and we have another snow day tomorrow because we got so much snow and ice. So like today was supposed to be an A day and tomorrow was supposed to be a B day, but because we had a snow day today and a snow day tomorrow, Monday will not be the A day. So I still get to see those students. It was just bumped. But I always laugh about the A day students because they kind of get the short end of the stick because I'm trying things out with them. But I, you know, will apologize to them like, you know what, I'm going to try something new. I haven't done this before and it might flop a little bit, but thank you so much for your patience. And I think it's good for students to see, like, you're trying something new. Like, I'll give you an example. I was trying Seesaw, which is a tech platform or tech tool. And I had done Seesaw a lot when I was teaching virtually 100% last year, and I used it all the time. But I didn't really have to worry about getting kids into Seesaw because they were at home and like their parents were helping with that, or their classroom teacher already got them into Seesaw. So they already knew how to do it. But this year, because I was in person and I'm trying to get them into Seesaw, I really had to think through all the steps of like how to get them to point A or point B so that they could actually do what I was asking of them. So yeah, I had a few flops, but Then I figured it out. And I even had some students who were like, oh, I've used CSAP before and you need to do this or you need to do that. So they're teaching me, I'm learning. And then B-Day is so much better. So like, I do feel passionately about that. We often as educators feel like everything has to be perfect and that we don't want to try something new because it might flop. But I think it's really important that we do try something new. Another good example of this is centers. I have talked to so many music educators about centers who are, they're really intrigued by the idea. They're excited by it, but they're just worried it's going to flop. They're worried about failing with it. And I think it's important that you try it out and you kind of experiment and you see what works because yeah, in one class, there might be a little bit of failure, a little bit of, you know, things not working exactly the way that you think they should, but then the next time you do it, it's going to be so much better and you've learned from it and now you're trying something new. And I do have a blog post about centers that I could also send you the link to that's like how to get started with centers. But yeah, I just think it's important to try to be courageous and try something new.
Yes, it's really essential that we're brave. And that we take risks. Don't we tell the children to do that?
Yes.
Yeah, we should take our own advice. And children are very forgiving. And it's important that they see we are, you know, walking the walk, walking the talk, talking the walk.
Yeah.
What's the,
yeah. You know, sure. You know, yeah.
Putting our money where our mouth is. And can I just say, do you ever giggle though when you say B-Day? Do you ever think of B-Day?
Like B-Day?
B-Day. Like
That's not like super common in the States. But now that you say that, bidet. Yeah.
We did say bidet. Maybe it's the way we say it in Australia. And not that it's a, we don't have them very much here either. But anyway, sorry, popped into my head. Oh, my heavens. All right. Well, on that very pleasant note, I'm going to let you go, Aileen. It's lovely to have a chat with you and see you, on the other side of the world. And you have given music teachers so many great ideas and inspiration today. And I thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me on, Debbie. It was a pleasure.
See ya.
Bye.
As we know, laughter relieves stress. Don't lose sight of the funny side of life. Thought of telling you a joke about paper? But I'm not going to because it's just terrible. This podcast was brought to you by Crescendo Music Education, connecting, supporting and inspiring music educators. In the show notes, you'll find links to Crescendo's social media platforms. Please connect with me and be part of the Crescendo community. You might consider becoming a Crescendo member. For a low annual fee, you can access hundreds of files, worksheets, printables, workbooks, repeat workshops and webinars, and receive great discounts on events. So come and connect with me, Debbie O'Shea. See you in the socials.